Welcome to Podcast Gurus, brought to you by GHA Marketing. Our guest today is Thiphane Magbe, co-founder and COO of Product and the host of the Product Guy podcast. Product helps entrepreneurs go from idea to market with full-service global sourcing and end-to-end supply chain services. Today, expect to learn how a single podcast episode led to $1.5 million in sales for Thiphane. Explain how podcasting can facilitate the diversification of revenue systems for our businesses and how partnering with podcasters can open up new revenue opportunities. And of course, discover the importance of commitment to excellence for client satisfaction, including going above and beyond to ensure quality and customization. Before we begin, please remember to subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. It really helps the show. And if you're there, please also leave us a review. 5 stars do amazing things for the podcast, so we'd love to get your reviews as well. And we're going to keep bringing you different gurus in the podcast industry to explain to you all the different ways you can use your podcast to help grow your business. And with that, here's Thiphane.
Thiphane, welcome on the B2B Podcast Stories. We are going to talk today about a lot of things, your podcast, your business, and a lot of other stuff that you've been doing. First of all, amazing testimonial on your website from John Lee Dumas. Like, that was really spot on, well played, and that's pretty solid. Tell me a bit about that. How did that happen?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, that podcast is really my introduction to podcasting, and I'll get into what that podcast is. So John Lee Dumas is a friend, colleague, customer, ally, mentor. Love him. Love John. Love his podcast, Entrepreneur on Fire, EO Fire. I mean, if you don't know it, you need to. It's a great show. My business partner was doing podcasts for his book, The Power of Starting Something Stupid. And he mentioned on John's podcast that we were starting this business called Product, where we launch physical products to consumers. And John, it struck a curious chord with him. And he said, well, let's talk more after the show, which doesn't happen much with John, right? And they got to talking. And in the conversation, John basically said, hey, you know, I'm looking to launch these books. I don't know how to structure it. I don't know how to do it. He started asking Richie about, you know, publishing, self-publishing, all the questions. Long story short, fast forward about 3-4 months later, John does a Kickstarter and does $450,000 in sales in 30 days for the Freedom Journal. It works so well. A year later, he does another Kickstarter for the Mastery Journal for another $270,000 in pre-sales. And then a year after that, he launches Podcaster's Paradise, which is his premium podcast coaching program, with a beautiful leather-bound journal that he does with Kate. John launches this whole new revenue stream to his business using his podcast. His audience were able to help him do that in this venture called Product. Here's where it gets crazy, though. John aside, you know, if we put John, Entrepreneur on Fire, that business to the side, we trace from that one podcast episode another $1.5 million in sales within the first year and a half, 2 years. And so for us, that was the oh my gosh moment. Podcasting is underutilized. It is not appreciated. And it led to other projects. I'll name a few. We ended up, Product, my company, working with other podcasters like Pat Flynn, right? Or podcast businesses like the Switch Pod back here, right, where we create products for vloggers and YouTubers and digital creators. And it also led to John created courses with my business partner Richie on how to be a podcast guest, so people could also take advantage of the marketing opportunities with podcasts.
That is absolutely insane, and I want to dig in that $1.5 million in sales. Thiphane, there is so much to unpack here. How do you explain that podcast has been such a lead generator, but literally a sales generator for such a long period of time, for such a, what can be seen as a short discussion, right? Insightful, nonetheless, but how do you explain this?
Well, so there's two sales aspects. There's John selling a product to his audience, which we always thought was only accessible to the superstars, the action heroes who were branded on the cereal box and had the socks and the kids' underwear, right? Like, traditionally, we're talking birthday party, the cool t-shirt, maybe the professional surfer or skater gets his own t-shirt, right? But to the average consumer today, and this has been true for about almost 10 years now, the person they're watching on YouTube or listening to in their ear every day is as famous to them as the biggest podcaster. And this is true in the gaming, esports creators, podcasters, vloggers. You think it sounds almost silly, but it's true, right? For the same reason, people that play in college football and basketball want to get paid. They're like, you're using my name, right? And people want to consume that and support those individuals. And so for John, number one is, hey, his audience wants to support. They want a physical connection with John. And John didn't want to just have a transaction, buy a shirt. He said, I want to give you something of meaning to help you achieve your goals. Something that's beautiful, right? And if you've seen the Freedom Journal, it's a beautiful book. It's gorgeous, right? And so that was that. On the product side, what we realize is John's audience is a group of entrepreneurs. They're people that are starting their entrepreneurial journey, that are aspiring for an entrepreneur journey, or in some cases, there are people that have been doing this a while and they're trying to stay current and on top of it. And so now they hear of a good or service that meets their unique need to create physical products referred to and vouched for by John. Of course, there's the trust there. They're trusting him enough to listen every day for 20 to 30 minutes. They're going to listen when he says, I trust these guys.
And there is another aspect of sales in that story, Tiffin. There is basically selling to your audience or monetizing your audience, or I would prefer to say bringing value to your audience in a paid service or paid product format. But there is also the doing exactly this to your guests, because the way it all happens is between your co-founder, your partner, and John Lee Dumas. Did he start with a podcast, or was it just a conversation?
Well, it was a conversation about getting on the show, and then it was the show, and then there was follow-up, many follow-up conversations after then. But for us selling to John's audience, they heard the podcast, they followed literally the episode notes, clicked on our website, and inquired, right? And to this day, I can tell you, we still get inquiries. You know, some of them more interesting than others, right? So we're fortunately in a position where we get to turn down business, which is, you know, a luxury. We understand that. But we still get inquiries from that meeting. And I think it's really word of mouth marketing, but in this case, with a megaphone that actually reaches millions of people.
I love that story. What a start for a B2B Podcast Stories episode. So tell us a bit more about your podcast, Tiffin, the Product Guy podcast. What's that?
So the Product Guy podcast is about allowing people in the product space to share their unique experience in their industry, in their skill set, so that other people that are also in the product space get to learn from that. I have the privilege of working with manufacturers around the world. I mean, from China to India to Pakistan to Mexico to Turkey to Algeria to the United States and Canada, right? Literally around the world. And making lots of different products or business and working with entrepreneurs. And you'd be surprised how much the person making socks for babies can teach the person who's been in the steel industry for 20 years. And it sounds ludicrous, but I'm telling you, once you get into it and you start to learn about these problems and you say, wait a second, there's a lot of overlap here and there's a lot I could take from my camera accessories to the journal sale business or what they're doing in social media over here. No one's tried that in my space yet. Maybe I should give that a go. And so the Product Guy podcast is all about helping bridge the lapses in information that you can, that you don't have when you're solely focused in one industry. And then the only other thing we try to do in the podcast is just to give industry updates. You know, during COVID, during a little bit after that, there were so many delays and it was hard to catch up and to know what was correct information, that with our staff in China and all these places, we were able to say, look, this is exactly what's happening. Ignore the muck and the he said, she said finger pointing. If you want to be successful, this is the way to go.
So tell me what the sockets for baby manufacturer has in common with the steel manufacturer. Like, how do you make those links? Is it just like pure business advice overall, how to manage a business? Is it industry specific? Like, how do you make the link between those two and I guess all the other industries that you're talking about?
Sure. Well, the person that makes the socks obviously is going to be teaching the steel person how to fail faster, right? Initially, because in steel, they've got heavy capital expenses. And so they're going to be much more, as they should, methodical, make sure that they do things correctly. Whereas the sock person, if they have to throw away, you know, a couple dozen socks, who cares? Not the end of the world, right? And so even if they say, well, I can't do that in steel, but understanding the principle of how can you quickly test and validate new ideas? And so the steel manufacturer can look and say, okay, I know how to do that. They can also learn about, for example, we'll have, and I haven't had a sock reseller on my show, I should disclaimer.
If anybody is listening to this, don't hesitate to contact TFN.
Though we make a lot of socks, but they'll also learn something like, oh, when the sock purchaser, when they're going out sourcing and they're choosing manufacturers, what are they focused on? Where are they diversifying? How are they doing that? And then if they're a steel manufacturer, understanding what buyers are thinking, especially newer buyers, is extremely valuable. It's about understanding the market and management styles. And I mean, not every episode is worth the most to every individual, but I can tell you, we even brought on some guests from the Product Guys podcast where they talk about the software side of things, right? So they're from Silicon Valley. And I thought that was extremely informative for physical product people to understand. Look, the methodology that they're using over here in software definitely applies to what you're doing here. And they're talking about security and you're talking about compliance. It's all the same, just different application.
Chicken or the egg? What was first, the podcast? Did you start talking about products and then started the product? Or did you start product and then started the Product Guy podcast?
Product first. We started product, and then about 5 years later, 6 years later. Yeah, 5 or 6 years later, I started the Product Guy podcast. For 2 years, we uploaded weekly and had a lot of content. And I think we're going to bring it back. We're going to provide more content and more area. What I love about the podcast is you can literally listen to it. And the content that was in there was evergreen. It's not content that goes stale. It's not current events. My interview with John Lee Dumas from 2 years ago, it still applies today. It's true. It's got real principles that a podcaster, a product creator can apply, and their business will benefit from it.
So an interesting question, actually, Tiffin. Why did you stop? Why did the podcast stop? Because you're the first guest who hasn't published an episode for a little while, but I found the story and the podcast so good that we wanted to interview you. But what's the reason behind it?
I think there's a couple things that happened. I got behind is the first honest thing. I was usually 3 to 4 months ahead, and I did really well. And then business grew, and it got so demanding on the product side that I got to the point where I had to say, hey, I've got four kids now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I've got this business that is just really draining time in a good way, in a positive way. I slowed down with a podcast and I had a little bit of runway and I didn't catch up. We're getting ready to come back. I'll tell you another thing that happened. My wife's from Tahiti, and we went to Tahiti for a month and a half. And while I was there, every day, people stopped me to ask about business, how to start a company, how to not have a job. Like, and I'm not talking like every day lightly. I mean this every day.
Did people know you? Or?
Oh, yeah, yeah. These were friends, family, neighbors, people I knew 15 years ago in Bora Bora when I worked there. We're talking like from everywhere. And I posted a video and just a short reel. And I said, look, the average Polynesian makes a lot more than you think. This is on French, right? For the local community. And the hate started coming from everywhere. But so did the, well, how? Why? Just general finance, entrepreneurship, you know, like salary thing. And so we ended up creating a community in Tahiti where we launched a coaching program. And we have a goal of having 1,000 people launch their own businesses in Tahiti. Let me tell you about the first group we had. Remarkable. It's unbelievable. We did it was a 6-week program where we do a business sprint where we take them from idea to actually selling, whether you have a business license or not. We are going for it. We're not waiting for permission. We're going to ask for forgiveness, right? After the first class, one of the men calls me, Freddie, and he says, I quit my job yesterday.
Right. He's all in, man.
Yeah. Now the pressure's on me, right? I got to make sure he's successful. Fast forward a year later, he has his own driving school. He's fully booked. They've booked their first vacation with his wife and kids in 6 years. They're going on a holiday. He's about to hire staff and open up another location. We have another one that moved to another island, left their jobs. They've opened up a store. They're going for it. Two others are now growing their real estate business. And so I started this side project that I thought I was going to be able to cuddle with the podcast and the family and the home. And that's just been so fulfilling. I've put a little bit more energy in that. And I think I have to bring the podcast, resurrect it.
But I love that. That's the point. And so first of all, that's such a cool story. So hats off to that. So how many are we out of the 1,000 businesses launched? Are we close to the goal or getting there?
Oh, no, it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while. But I think if the goal is reasonable, it's not reasonable. For a goal to actually be a reasonable goal, it has to be so unreasonable. You don't understand it. It seems stupid. You know, I was with a meeting with my friend, Brian Hawkins. Brian and I used to have a business. And he called me and we were talking and he's such a good mentor. And he said, TFN, you need to think of the scariest business goal you can. Like, tell me how much money do you want to make so that it scares you? Like, you're uncomfortable talking about making that much money. And I said, okay. And he goes, now multiply it by 10. That's your goal. And I said, wow. Like, it changed the way I thought about things. So if a goal is reasonable, it's not reasonable.
Man, I loved it. And to also look at it from another eye, like you change one person's life, like one, it's already a huge win. Not that you should stop there, but like you change the life of a French Polynesian person who can bring his or her family on vacation after taking the plunge. That's insane. As a mission, that's super cool.
Well, and I'll tell you this, you know, I have the privilege of having seen, like we talk in the podcast, a lot of different businesses operate a lot of different ways. So I've gotten to seeing what works. What do I know about running a driving school? I don't know anything about running a driving school, but I know how I would set up a driving school. I know what I would want my life to look like. I know that getting customers is your first priority and that there's ways on the back end to figure that out. And so once you explain people, look, just sell. The rest literally figures itself out. And you empower them and you give them confidence and you build them up. People are meant to create. That is literally our purpose, to be creative and to create.
And you know how to drive. So two reasons to help those businesses.
I do know how to drive.
Imagine now you tell, no, actually, I don't have the driver's license. Man, that is just so cool. So tell me a bit about Product. What do you do there?
So Product is a global sourcing company.
What is that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let's say you wanted to create a shirt, a dress shirt, for example, and you said, hey, I know what I want it to look like. I know who I want to sell it to. I know I'm going to sell this shirt at $44.99, whatever the number is. But I don't have a factory. I don't know who to hire. I don't know how to choose these components. I don't know how to go negotiate with someone in Vietnam to make this. But I know I need 1,000 or 5,000 or 20,000, whatever the number is, right? Product will go out and find that factory for you. We'll negotiate. We'll interface. We'll manage quality control. We'll handle shipping, logistics, taxes. In some cases, we'll even manage your warehousing and fulfillment. We really try to make it so all you have to focus on is selling and building your brand, and that the rest of the operational function of the business is taken care of. I mean, if you look at businesses, there's sales and there's operations. Sales make money. Operations create profit. Those are two very different activities. You can't have profit without sales. So instead of dividing your life and saying, how do I become an operator and a salesman? Just go sell. Sell. Do not worry about the operations. There are solutions. Whether it's Product or another company, there is someone that will manage it better, faster, cheaper than you. And you can focus on what actually generates revenue.
So that is a super interesting model. How do you, without getting into too much details, unless you want to share, of course, how do you price that? Is it a consulting fee? Is it a revenue sharing kind of thing? Because there is tremendous value to anybody who knows how to sell but doesn't know Product. They just come to you and they're going to make truck ton of money. So how do you price that? How do you navigate that?
Well, again, fortunately, we get to choose who we work with, right? That's number one. We've been doing this long enough. We do enough revenue. We've been Inc. 5000. We do it all. We choose who we get to work with. As far as the model goes, it depends. When we're working with large corporations, they have line items that they need to play with, consulting, outsource partner. We want to give you a rev share, royalty. So big corporations, their accountings, their budgets kind of determine how we get paid, right? Most small businesses or medium businesses, they just want us to make our margin, drop off the product, and be done. And so we'll make anywhere from 7% on the low end. And on some really complex, low volume items, we might make 50%, right? We're generally closer into like the 18, 24 range is where we end up at. But yeah, so let's say you want to make that shirt and it's $50 and you said, my budget is 20. We might make it for 15, 18, somewhere in that range, and then get it to you at $20. And then you do the sales and you keep the rest.
Man, that's super interesting. So I'm also curious to understand how that works. We're straying a bit away from the podcast, but it's just so interesting. Jean-Louis Dumas, in his testimonial on your website, anybody wanted to check it, the link is in the description, mentioned that you guys went to China to actually check on the suppliers, the potential manufacturers in the factory itself, just to make sure, yeah, that's the guy you need to work with. So how far do you go in the you focus on sale, we take care of the rest? Like, it really feels like, it almost feels like a partnership. How far do you go and how does it work?
All the way. We go all the way. I'll give you a crazier example because yes, we go to China. We had a development firm that builds beautiful luxury office buildings. Not your Joe Schmo office building. These are high-end, gorgeous office buildings. And they came to us and they said, hey, we're paying $13 a square foot for these planks of hardwood floors. Can you help us? And we said, yes, we can. This is where it gets weird, right? So we end up finding this perfect partner, but they won't get back to me. So I reach out to them and they're not answering, but I find out their CEO is from a city my uncle lives in France. And so I just called the guy. This is a company in Vietnam, right? The CEO lives in Paris. So outside of Paris. So I get him on the phone and he's like, send me your order. So we go to Vietnam, we meet with them, show them the hardwood floors, and they're like, okay, but this is very specific. This is a certain type of French oak. We can only get this in certain forests, so we're going to have to go pick it. So we flew someone from Vietnam to France to walk the forest, to choose the trees that would be cut, that were then planed and made into hardwood floors to then be shipped to the United States to make these luxury hardwood floors. So not only did we find the factory and go meet with them, we flew someone to France to the forest to choose the trees to cut to make into their hardwood floors. Yeah, we go all the way. And sometimes the projects are more simple when we're making a baseball hat. It's like, all right, well, we know the hat people, like, just make the hat, right? But when we're doing something truly unique, like John's book, his paper was custom made for him. You're not going to find that the paper in John's book was made to be in John's book. So if you go try to make John's book with a printer in New York, which we've tried before, they quoted us $87 a book in quantities of tens of thousands. We made the paper custom to him. It's not your average paper in a bookstore. It's special.
So if I want to make the Guillaume's book, I cannot get the same paper as John Lee Dumas. Is that what you're telling me, TFN?
The answer is we can make it again, but it's a pricey, time-consuming, high-volume process, right? But in theory, it can be done. But the book, what I'm saying is if you go to Barnes & Noble or any bookstore and you look at pages and then you look at John's, you'll notice this isn't the same. And you're right. It isn't the same. It's intentionally done. So the paper and the ink just feels a little bit softer and the pen just rolls. So when you're writing on it, you don't have the friction. Like it's really, really nice paper.
So now you sold it so well that this is not an ad for John Lee Dumas' book, by the way, but it's called The 100-Day Goal Journal. Sorry, Accomplish What Matters to You. We'll put the link in the description. And now I need to put my hands on a copy of this just to test the paper. Is there any link between the product and the, sorry, I'm going to say this with a proper English accent, the product and the Product Guy podcast? Like, was there ever a link between the two? Or did you just do this because you were like, hey, I'm in this industry, it's just great, let's talk about it?
Well, there's obviously a link, which is me, right? I'm the connection. So on product's end, I should say I'm the operator. So I'm usually Wizard of Oz behind the scenes, which is how we like it, right? It's how I like it. Great relationships with my customers. We work very closely together. The Product Guy podcast, like, for me, was a way to just share some of the more technical, nerdy, operational behind the scenes knowledge. You know, there's a lot of gurus and experts that will tell you how they launched a $4 million business or $1 million funnel in 8 days. And it's like, well, that is extremely uncommon. And they put generally an enormous amount of money into ads. But even if they do, how do they fulfill? How do they deliver? Where on the Product Guy podcast, you know, we were able to bring founders on that said, not only are we going to tell you how we operate, I had a guy come on who tell us how he sold 3 businesses for over $100 million each. Like the literal, how did we do that? Right? There's not a lot of people that are willing to actually tell you how they did that. We had a gentleman named Brandon Poulin who grew their women's weight loss company to $56 million in revenue. How did they do that? How did they operate to get that? That's kind of the secret sauce, operations, right? No one wants to say it. Everyone will tell you how to make the $1 million, but they won't tell you how to keep it. Remember, there's revenue, operations. Operations generate profit. The reason I say that is profit is revenue minus expenses. Expenses, right, take out. The lower you keep your expenses, the higher your profits. So if you know how to make a ton of revenue, if you make $1 million in revenue, but it cost you $980,000 in ads and product to get there. How much money did you actually make, right? And so we like to work with businesses that are bottom line focused. They are in it to win it, not just to do a big pump and flex their muscles. But if you're actually looking to have a business that supports you, your lifestyle, your staff, your personnel, you are in it for profit.
Who makes the sales at the products?
My business partner, Richie, is primarily responsible for sales. We also work with some agencies, so that do design, engineering, etc., that come to us. But our biggest lead generator by a mile has been podcasts. We do more podcasts and podcast guesting. We've never spent a dollar in ads ever on anything. All unpaid, all word of mouth.
Now, that's super interesting. So here you mean guesting as in going on other people's podcasts?
Correct.
Love that. Can you explain that to us? Like, how do you come around this? Do you go to a PR? Do you reach out to podcasts yourself? How do you find them? What's the whole shebang?
No, they usually reach out to us. They usually ask us because in our industry, most people are really introverts, right? They don't want to, even in pod, I found most podcasters are also introverts, by the way. Very few of them are extroverts, but most people aren't willing to tell their supply chain story. They're not willing to tell you how they make a business and who their customers are. And we're the opposite. We take our customers to the factory. We're like, come. And so our perspective of it is, I think, a little refreshing. And because I have a podcast, Richie has a podcast, Richie has a few books, my book's on the way, you know, it's, we're just open books. We just tell the story. We tell it as it is. And so generally people reach out to us for podcasts.
Why do you do that?
That might not be the right solution for everyone, right? Maybe you have to go out, the average person has to go out and try to be on podcasts and solicit. We are fortunate where we don't have to do that.
No, but that's, I mean, so for sure. But there is also the fact that you built the story, you did the thing that got you there. Like now people are reaching out to you because you built the authority, you've delivered on what you've committed on, and so on and so forth. So now people are like, wait a minute, that's a great story. I mean, we reached out to you, basically, TFN, to hear that story. So yeah, it's not just luck. It's like you worked for it. Why did you decide to actually give away those industry secrets? Like, why are you an open book where you could be as well? Like, hey, our business model is we're going to get you the best product at the lowest cost. But why talk about it?
Well, that's a good question. Traditionally, finding suppliers was really hard. For example, when I started in the supply chain industry, I was flying to China almost every month, finding factories to meet with, going to trade shows. And we still do that. Yeah, and I don't want you to think we don't do that. We still do that. But the internet has just changed the way we access information. And so some say, well, I have a factory. And I say, fine, I have a relationship. And if I call my factory and I say, drop everything, they drop everything. I'll give you an example. Someone called me in January. I was in China with Richie. And they said, we need this product immediately. We need 10,000 units. And I need them by the end of February. Well, if there is Chinese New Year between, you know, the 7th of February and the 18th of February or whatever, and they needed them on the 23rd. I called a factory. I had them stop everything they had on the production line, move all these products on. We finished an entire 10,000 unit order in about 12 days and shipped them to them. That might not mean anything to a lot of people, but when something is supposed to take 3 months and we're getting it done in 8 days because they said, I'll never ask again, but I need you and I need you right now. We deliver. And having the name of someone you found on Alibaba, though that's great, we work in the executive space. We are eating, meeting, dining. I just flew to Hawaii to go meet a factory owner that we've done business with for 13 years. The relationship transcends the transaction, right? we are working on a different level. We are mutually beneficial, mutually dependent on one another. And we're not focusing on the lesser part of the transaction, but the business as a whole.
I love that. And to, so indeed, to even emphasize more on what you said here, TFM, it's like people don't imagine it. It's not just like, because you have many websites where you can just go and you say, hey, I'm going to get my own personalized t-shirt and I'm going to write something different. It's going to be produced and shipped in like 15 days. That exists. But actually getting a product according to a design that you've made within specific delays from a location to another, it's insane. So actually, Hussam is the next engineer from Procter & Gamble. And like the coordination, the efforts that needs to go into all this, like getting the right design, getting the right production line in place, how many production line do you need, at which, like what's the flow of it, how many products, what if something stops, who are the suppliers, who coordinates that, who is in charge, who sends the, like it's insane. It's insane. And actually getting...
So you see that item right there, the switch pod?
For people not listening to us, I'm gonna not watching us, I'm gonna describe it. So it's a kind of tripod that is above a cup. Am I correct?
Yes, that's right. So that is an item called the switch pod. We developed it for two gentlemen named Pat Flynn and Caleb Watchett. Pat Flynn's got the SPI podcast, great show. That idea was a napkin idea. What I mean by that was they're at an event with Richie and they were talking and they said, what everyone is using isn't working. We don't know what the solution is, but it would do something like A, something like B, and maybe C, and it would need to at least hold this much weight. Idea. 13 iterations later, they're launching a podcast. We're going to keep fast forwarding. They're in Best Buy. They're sponsoring events. They're a nationally recognized brand for the vloggers. Real company, right? So finding someone to make a phone plug is one thing, or print a t-shirt, but taking an idea, something that's abstract that you can't even define yet, and making it a real physical marketable product is a different level of complexity. And so we strive and thrive for the most complex scenarios where we can add the most value.
Wow. I love that. And I didn't know Pat Flynn, so I'm checking. So SPI is the Smart Passive Income podcast. If you want to check it out, we'll put the link in the description as well. TFM, that's just so cool. What would be your advice for podcasters? You who've been a podcast guest multiple times, you had your own show about to kick back in, you've linked the two with your business. What are your advice for B2B podcasters or wannabe B2B podcasters, as I like them? What would you recommend? Where to start? How to do it? Actually, it's a product, right? A podcast. Like, how do you get from the idea to production, getting episodes out, bringing value to your community?
Yeah, I love that question. I think the answer is start with the end in mind. If you take the end of the show and bring it forward, meaning podcasts are fascinating things because they can be a lot of different things. Are you leaving a memoir for your kids? You know, is that your legacy that you're leaving behind? Are you trying to get customers? Are you just trying to make friends? Is this just a hobby? Whatever it is, right? Let's take that, whatever that thing is, the goal, the end goal, and bring it to the front and make sure all your activities revolve around that end goal. Then if your goal is to grow for the purpose of sales, I would say quality over quantity. And then quantity should be more marketing with a high quality production versus high quantity podcast that's low quality marketing and things like that, right? That's, I think, my recommendation to everyone. And then the last thing, if you've got the idea and you want to do it and you're sitting on it and you're like, I don't have the right microphone, it literally doesn't matter. Your iPhone or Samsung will do just fine. If the content is good because the quality of what you're saying is interesting, people will listen regardless the microphone. People still listen to oldies. The quality sucked.
100%.
Just saying, you know?
And it's like the barrier to entry for a podcast is so low, There is this stat that we love with Usami is 90% of podcasters won't make it past episode 3. And of the people that do, 90% of them won't make it past episode 20. it takes publishing 21 episodes to be a top 1% podcaster. Obviously, we don't mean audience here, but like in terms of getting a podcast out, start bringing value, and then you iterate. Each episode, you iterate, you improve something, 1% better every time, you compound on this, and you end up with a great thing. But absolutely love that. You mentioned quite a few during this episode, TFN, but we like to ask all our guests, three podcasts that you listen to that you would like to recommend, ideally in the B2B sphere. But if not, that's fine.
I'll say the Richie Norton Show.
Okay, how do you write that? Richie, what?
Richie Norton Show. Richie's my business partner. He does an occasional podcast. Richie's an author, a thought leader. Every time I'm around him, I feel like I'm a sponge, just being fed immense amounts of wisdom, not just like tidbits of knowledge, just wisdom. And when you listen to his show, you 100% get that. I think I would be silly not to mention John Lee Dumas and Pat Flynn because they've been on the show. Great content, kind of the godfathers of business podcasting. But there's one other one that I think people really need to listen to. And it's by a guy named Benjamin Hardy. It's called The Dr. Benjamin Hardy Show. Ben has written books like Personality Isn't Permanent, 2X is Easier Than 10, or 10X is Easier Than 2X, Future Self, Who Not How. Those are books that he's written. And Ben is a psychologist by trade who's now taken that psychology and then taken the leaders in business coaching and said, hey, this is how these business coaching principles support what we know about the human mind. And so if you're looking to better yourself and really aggressively improve yourself as a person, as a business leader, whatever you're trying to do, I would highly recommend Dr. Benjamin Hardy's show.
Love that. GLD, John Lee Dumas, will be on this show very soon. I never heard of the other ones and will definitely give it a go. TFN, thank you so much. It was an absolute masterpiece.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the B2B Podcast Stories. We hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, please don't forget to hit subscribe and check us out at ghamarketing.com. Have a great day.